you are. I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young
woman. Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and you are listening to thought-provoking talk on Dresser After Dark.
And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet not by chance.
Steve Bimon is with us. He's self-taught. He's a self-made millionaire. Presently, he's the founder and chairman of the Steve Bimon Group, a personal development company working to help people along the five paths to a transformed life. He's the author of two published ebooks, one print book to be published, a two-volume, 12-CD audio library, and over 200 SBG cast highlighting articles that have been published on each of the five paths. And let us say, Steve, I welcome to the show.
Well, good evening, Michael. It's wonderful to be with you and your audience tonight.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here, Steve. Let's talk about, there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about tonight. But for the moment, the roller coaster Dow. What is the Dow? Let's lay a base. Most people have no idea when it comes to money what things are, what drives the economy or what stalls the economy. So let's start out with the Dow. What is the Dow?
Well, the Dow is a measure of an aggregate amount of stocks, 30 stocks to be specific, and it's a relative measure of the value of the stock market. So people look at that as an indicator of whether it's a good time to buy stocks or a poor time to buy stocks. And right now, we've seen overwhelming volatility in the Dow caused by this fear, uncertainty, and doubt that's so prevalent in the marketplace today.
Now, by the way, the fear, the uncertainty, and the doubt in the marketplace, is it the marketplace in and of itself, or are there a myriad of messages, Steve, that are scaring people and also the majors that don't want to invest, they don't want to do what they would normally do because of what they think could possibly happen? I know it's easy to invest when you can forecast the future. Right now, we don't have a future to forecast. So where do you think this fear is coming from?
Well, clearly, we had an awful lot of press hype about this S&P downgrade, for example, where folks look at that and say, oh my goodness, is it that bad that these rating agencies are saying the U.S. could default on its debt? Well, there are a couple of points I'd like folks to know about that. Number one, that is the ultimate red herring. There is no way for the United States as a sovereign nation with its own currency to default. The fact is we have more than enough money to pay our debts, and if we didn't, we could just print the money like they do in the Federal Reserve to pay for our debts. So the idea of the U.S. defaulting is truly a non-issue, but it certainly makes good media and it makes great sound bites for the politicians.
Oh, no question. No question. But the average person, Steve, how did they, and this is going to be a really tough question because there's got to be an answer to this somewhere. How does the average person, the person sitting down for breakfast in the morning, having coffee and whatever, actually look at what's going on and get some kind of a light, some kind of a vision to see actually what's going on to be able to move through a lot of these things? You can talk transformation all day long, but if you got people frightened to death, they're not going to transform.
That's absolutely true. And Michael, you're hitting some of the keys on why I established the Steve Bimon Group. In the financial path, having grown up in the financial services industry and spent time as both a retail broker and an institutional person, it's very clear to me that the average American just isn't taught the financial literacy they need to go forward into that world. And so out of a non-understanding, they end up in a position of being afraid of it when they don't need to be. They just need to empower themselves with the knowledge and the understanding of the practices and procedures of Wall Street, and they can do fine too.
I think financial literacy is one of the, we need, Steve, we need this so badly. There's no question about it. And it's got to start out in the high schools, the junior high schools, and then move on so some of these kids have a grasp, a grip on what's going on economically in this world, or better yet, how to handle a checkbook. But the other side of that, I've been around for this planet for a lot of years now, and what I have seen is that good old American knock down, get up, and battle on seems to be dwindling, and we're getting into an area Well, a lot of these kids today, not all of them, but a lot of them, there's these entitlement mentalities going on, which in and of itself helps this, the helps and causes a lot of the confusion and the inability to be able to move through what the word finance means.
There's no question. I'd like to make two important points on that. Number one, I am involved with the Jumpstart Coalition, which is a national organization diligently working to bring financial literacy to our young people because they are the next generation that will build an economy for us. The second point, and I salute you for the wisdom you're showing, one of the establishment principles of the Steve Beeman Group is that there is not just a financial path, that we all go down as well an emotional path. And that oftentimes overrides the financial path with things like that entitlement mentality.
And by the way,
we know that that's destructive.
Now, by the way, then I want to go back to financial literacy for a moment. We live our world based on definition. The society develops the culture creates definition for what things are, and based on those definitions are the paths that we take. Here's where I think the confusion is. I might have mentioned this in the last night or two, but when you're 15 years old, you have a certain definition of money. When you're 25 years old, maybe there's another definition of money. Then when you're 35, 40, 50, and on up, you have another definition of money. The problem is if you're 35 or 40 years old and you spend money like you did when you were 15, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I think what occurs is without the financial literacy, there are people that are 25 and 30 years old spending like the 15-year-old because they don't know the difference.
Indeed. I've got six children, and they have gone through my Path to Prosperity program. And I'm pleased to say that for their age groups, they are 15 on down. They understand the importance of establishing retained earnings. They understand the importance of compounding investment returns. They understand the need to save capital. And those lessons need to be put into young people so that as they grow through their 20s and 30s and 40s, they haven't put themselves so far behind the eight ball that it's hard to get out. And then they start to make real mistakes.
You know, I knew a youngster who was about 17 years old, was as liberal as you could possibly get. She got her first job and she looked at her paycheck and she realized what was taken out of the paycheck, and she became a Republican very rapidly. And I think when you really come down to it, it's that money has to do with our, it also has to do with our political bent, the way we see the world. It's all wrapped around the dollar. That's a shame to say what I've just said, but it's wrapped around the dollar. Based on what you're going to get or what you don't, what you're not going to get or what you think you're not going to get is who you follow politically.
There's absolute fact that the financial path migrates over time. And to your point, I find, and I don't like to use the titles of liberal or conservative because it connotes a lot more than just money. We're talking political philosophy.
Sure.
But when you look at financial literacy, it does tend to put someone in a more pragmatic financial perspective, which is associated with being more conservative. If you look right now at the federal debt, for example, it's common sense to someone who understands this that you cannot borrow your way to wealth. And that's exactly what our state and federal governments have been doing for years because they can pull it over on the American people.
No question about it. And look at what happened with some of these stimulus packages. Oh, by the way, I didn't necessarily want to get political with that story, but it's been a joke around here for the longest time because somebody was sitting across the desk from me. It was her daughter, but we won't tell anybody. So we got a big smile.
Well, and it is true. As people get older and they put skin in the game, they tend to be a little more conscious of where their money goes. And so when people start to earn money and pay taxes, yes, all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, I didn't realize that I'm paying 25% of my money in taxes right off the start. In fact, Michael, it's interesting. Most folks that think I pay no federal income taxes, and we're looking at half the population today, they still pay taxes. They're just called employment taxes. And that's a 15% bite out of their paycheck.
No, absolutely, Steve. There's no question about it. And I really believe in my heart of hearts, well, you know, we've heard the words, the term financial literacy bannered about, thrown about for a long time now. But the reality of it, that truly what it is, if people would get a grasp, a handle on this, their lives would be completely different. And as a matter of fact, the way they live their lives would be different also. I have watched now for the last year or two, the stimulus packages that were going out. there was one business in particular, maybe you'll remember the name of it, just happened in the last couple of days or so. It was the way to create energy. It was the windmills. Right.
They were working on a new energy technology, and they got a bunch of federal money and then ended up going bust.
Yeah, and you know where they're working now? You know where they just went? It's been all over the news. They went to China.
They're in China, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So realistically, go ahead.
But, Michael, you're hitting such a fundamental thing. Folks don't understand the difference between a producer society and a consumer society.
Yes.
And this is a myth that the United States grows as a consumer society. That has never worked in the history of the world, and it won't work here. We must be a producer society, and that requires capital. And that capital comes from individual savings, not spending.
Yeah, who was it the other day that said corporations are your friends? I forgot who it was. But more important than that, there is a merit. There's merit to that statement. It doesn't mean that because somebody's in a corporation, they're a thief and they're going to grab all your money and so on and so forth. Steve, that is the biggest myth that we've ever gotten into. Yes, there's the Bernie Madoffs, and yes, there are a few people to do that. But that's not the entire corporate world. And if it wasn't for that corporate world.
Michael, if I might interject, as I've gone out in the institutional financial world and I've met some very wealthy people, without exception, they're people of honor, people of courage, people of vision, and they're people that are genuinely nice to be around. They're your next door neighbor. They're not the big bad Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life.
No, no, by the way, absolutely. And I think that's where the key is. Are these people with the innovation, the creativity, and the ability to create things to cause jobs? As they make money, they reinvest. When they reinvest, they expand. As they expand, we stop becoming a consumer society, and we become the producer.
That's right. And my whole goal with the Path to Prosperity program that you mentioned was to bring people up to speed on this financial literacy issue so that they knew the truth, not filtered by the commentary of Washington, Wall Street, and Madison Avenue. And so my goal is to empower the folks so that they can build a better financial future based upon truth, not based upon spun assumptions from any of those major institutions.
Absolutely. Steve, no question. And I think you couldn't have said it any better in any way, shape, or form. If we're not careful, we're not going to be who we were. And who we were was the most powerful country in the world. If there's anybody who's got a problem, guess who they come to? They come to us. We put money into places where we probably shouldn't put money into it, but we have saved a tremendous amount of lives. It's always been us. And if we're not very careful, we're going to end up to be a third world country, and we're the ones who are going to be asking for help and for aid. And we've got the time to stand up and take a look at it now, understand our economy, understand the flow of money, how it works, why it works, and do something about all this.
Well, I salute you for bringing that message out, because it is absolute truth. And when people hear in the media folks talking like you and they downplay it, they don't have a basic understanding of economics. A fundamental law of economics is that debt must be settled. And this now, what will be $16.3 trillion in debt at the federal level, it's going to be settled somehow, and it's going to be paid for.
Sure.
And if the American people allow our political class to continue to do that, our children and grandchildren will not be living the standard of living that we do today.
No question. Hey, Steve Beamon, we're just about out of time. I could talk to you all night about this. Is there a website we can find you at and participate in some of the programs that you have to offer?
Most certainly. I'd welcome folks to visit me at stevebeamongroup.com on the web, or visit me on Facebook at Steve Beamon Group. Those 250 articles that you so kindly mentioned are up there. And if you don't mind, I'd like to make an offer to your audience, if it's okay with you.
Please.
If they want to give me a call at 866-308-3999, if they want to call me, I will give them at no charge information on how the banking sector works in their life, and also information on how their credit scores are calculated and how they can manage their credit scores for improvement.
Wonderful. Hey, Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and I love what you have to offer. And, hey, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris, and Venice, Tokyo, and Cairo, and Lisbon, and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris, and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Come and sing a simple song, freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell the people everywhere. We the people here don't want a war. Hey there, Mr. Black Man, can you hear me? I don't want your diamonds or your game. I just want to be someone known to you as me. And I will bet my life you want the same. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air. Tell the people everywhere, we the people here don't want a war. 700 million, are you listening? Most of what you read is made of lies. But speaking one to one, ain't it everybody's son to wake to in the morning when we rise? Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air, tell the people everywhere.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to thought-provoking talk on Dresser After Dark. Stephanie Abrams with us. She's a travel expert. Value pack tips for businesses and leisure travels to avoid, hey, pitfalls and all those things where you can save a bunch of money. She's a TV host and a lot more, and we're going to find out. Stephanie, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael Ray.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. Travel, travel, travel. You know, today in the world that we live in, it's a little scary, and we need to be held by the hand, Stephanie, to say, this is where it's okay to go, and it's safe. And I really believe when you're dealing with travel tips today, that's something that will cause a lot of people to take that step to actually do some travel.
Well, I think probably one of the things that is grossly overlooked today is that there are people who are professionals in travel who really know what they're talking about, and on a one-on-one basis for your trip and your trip only, whether it's for business or pleasure, can give you the kind of information you need so that your experience is customized to fit your time, your interest, your pocketbook, and your lifestyle. You can't do that yourself playing around on the internet when your biggest concern is how cheap can I get it. And the way to get that personal advice is to use a travel agent and talk to a person who becomes your personal advocate. Everything's wonderful, Michael, when things are going great. When something goes wrong, that's when it separates the great people from the not-so-great people. And if you're out there fighting with an airline, a cruise line, a tour operator, a hotel chain, by yourself, you have no power whatsoever.
Not a good thing, there, no question about it. But the one of the things I want to go to, I'm on your website right now, and Ireland. There's so many people that I've talked to that everybody wants to go to Ireland. What is that special thing about that place? Because I can even feel it also.
I am so glad to hear that. You just gave me chills on a warm day. I'm really glad to hear that because when I am having a frustrating experience with some clerk at a counter or some fool on the telephone, and I just seem to be making no headway, or I'm trying to ease over from one car lane to another, make eye contact with the car next to me, who is bent on not allowing me to get into that space for whatever reason. I just look at these people, difficult people, and say, you know what I'd like to do for you? I'd like to send you to Ireland for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I sincerely mean it, because there is something uniquely special about that destination. And aside from the natural beauty of the landscapes, the seascapes, the incredible architecture that goes back not just for hundreds but thousands of years of natural sites and man-made sites, there's also every activity, every cultural area. Music abounds everywhere you go. But all of that is wrapped up in a very beautiful bow with the people of Ireland, who, by any kind of imagination, should be the most miserable people on the face of the earth, given their history of hardship and persecution and despair and difficulties. And yet they have managed to emerge as optimistic, hopeful, humorous, talented, creative, and the most warm, hospitable people you will ever meet. And all those little cutesy signs that you see in places, my favorite sign being the happiest days in a boat owner's life, or the day you buy the boat and the day you sell the boat.
Yeah.
But the signs that say you arrive in Ireland as a stranger and you go home as a member of the family, they are real. This is not lip service. When I bump into people in hotels, when I'm checking in at a hotel, a front desk, and I'm dealing with grumpy Gertie, who never lifts her eyes from the paper, never welcomes me, has no sense of warmth or hospitality whatsoever, is as curt and abrupt as she can be, that's the one I say, you know, I'd love to talk to your manager, because I'd love to give you a gift. I'd like to send you to Ireland for a week in the hope that that woman is going to come back, or man, as the case may be, imbued with the spirit of what real hospitality is. And it goes back to the Druids. They have a saying in Ireland, Cad Mila Falta. It means 100,000 welcomes. These people live it. They breathe it. And if you never left your hotel or the local pub or an attraction down the block, you'd have a fabulous experience in Ireland. If you never did a thing, saw a thing, went anywhere, You just hung out with the people. It's the most incredible experience on the face of the earth. And I keep threatening, if I disappear one day and you don't know where I am, look for me in Ireland.
Now, I hear that one loud and clear. As a matter of fact, Stephanie, I've never been to Ireland, but the pictures, the green
grass.
Let's
fix that, Michael.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm going tomorrow.
Now, where do you live?
I'm right outside of Milwaukee. The closest thing a Jewish boy can get to Ireland that you can possibly get.
Michael, I'm leaving for Milwaukee Thursday morning.
Oh, you are?
I'm going to be broadcasting live on Saturday between 10 a.m. and noon Central Time from the lobby of the Pfister Hotel. I will be Friday morning and mid-afternoon, I'll be doing recorded interviews. The Saturday show, Travelers 411, and you can go visit travelers411.com, which will give you all kinds of information. It's the interactive part of our website. But we do Travelers 411 Saturday between 10 and noon Central Time, and it streams live from my website during that time period. But we're heard coast to coast on terrestrial radio.
Sure.
And Friday from about 11 in the morning to about 3 in the afternoon, I'll be in the lobby of the Pfister. It'll look like we're broadcasting live, but we'll actually be recording interviews that will air on Travel with Stephanie Abrams Sunday evening in Central Time. It would be 5 to 8 p.m., and you can hear it streaming live at S. Abrams, my first initial and last name, sabrams.com. And if you forget who I am, just go to Google. Put in radio show travel expert, and I pretty much dominate the first 10 results. But we're going to be at the Pfister from Thursday to Monday when we check out to fly home. And we'll be over at Irish Fest, which is the largest Irish festival in the world. A little over 100,000 people will come through the gates down on Lake Michigan's lakefront between Friday at 4 when it opens and Sunday night at 9 or 10 or later. It ends about 9:30, 10 o'clock on Sunday night. But when it ends, there's this amazing fireworks display shot out over Lake Michigan. And there will be people coming in from all over Ireland who are in travel and tourism because one of the sponsors related to the Irish Fest is Tourism Ireland, and there are 17 stages there, and every stage has almost continual music, dancing, harpists. Trad on the Prom has come in years past. So there's music, dancing going on everywhere. There's one tent where every hour they run a different one-act play written by an Irish a playwright. And, you know, when you think about, and this goes on for 3 days, there's food. Of course, the beer is flowing. There are tour operators there who can give you information on travel to Ireland. If you're interested in travel, you'll get the information that you need and you'll get in the spirit. But if you just want to go and absorb the feeling of being there, and it's on the lakefront, which is absolutely gloriously beautiful. And nice and cool because there's always a breeze coming off the lake. It might be warmer up the hill a piece, but down on the lakefront it's lovely. One of my favorite things is on Saturday and Sunday, people who breed dogs that are considered Irish breeds, which would include Irish setters, Irish wolfhounds, those huge things that look like ponies, and Irish water spaniels, and I can't even think of what some of the other breeds are. They bring them down there. If you are a dog person, you will lose your mind. We had an Irish setter for 13 years. His name was Sir Timothy Dog. Dog spelled with two G's. And I just plan to wear my worst jeans and go down there and roll on the grass with them. And you see people, they come with, there'll be 8, 10, 15 Irish setters from puppies up to 5 years old, maybe 6 years old. It's absolutely glorious. But they do agility. These are champion dogs. You know, they're from the breeders, and they're all gorgeous and wonderful. But it's just a glorious day and a glorious evening and lots of fun and very reflective of an Irish spirit. which is a very special thing to snag onto. I'd like to get your bones over to Ireland, Michael. We'll have to talk about how we'll do that.
Oh, I would love to do that. As a matter of fact, Stephanie, years ago in another life, I was an entertainer, and I spent a year or so on cruise ships entertaining. And the one thing that I learned was the only dangerous thing about going on a cruise ship for a vacation is never get between a passenger and food. Stephanie, we're just about out of time. Website again, we can find you at.
It's travelers411.com. And from there, just click on sabrams.com. It'll take you over to the other part of the site where every show is archived going back to 2002. And if there's a subject that you're interested in, put the destination or the brand name or whatever, you know, cruise or you know, a topic, a country, and you'll get links will come up from our search engine on the website to any time we've written about it, talked about it, had anything to do with it, if there are photos. And by the way, Michael, we've got over 10,000 photos just of Ireland in the photo galleries at sabrams.com.
Hey, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. Hey, I'm a dog guy. You might find me rolling around in the grass on
Sunday. Why don't you come over on Saturday and meet me at the Pfister?
I think we will.
We'll be broadcasting between 10 and noon, and then we're going to go down to roam around at Irish Fest in Milwaukee.
Okay, you know what? That's not a bad idea. You just may appear there.
Yeah, it'll give us a chance to meet. We can talk. And if you go down to the fairgrounds, you'll have a chance to get imbued with Ireland, and then I'll help you make it happen.
I love it. Okay, hey, thanks, Stephanie.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. Gotta fly now.
I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray Dresser. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
Street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say don't cry because I'm alone.
Frederick Lade with us. He's a successful national speaker who's created the Inner Path to Success seminars in the DVD series. He teaches people to, listen to it, overcome physical limitations and achieving emotional happiness and stability. He's the author of the forthcoming book, it's not out quite yet, The Emotional Body Trap. He's been featured on the Mancow Mueller Show, WVLT, CBS, and WBIR, NBC, NPR, and WATE, ABC. And let us say, Frederick, hi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Michael.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. Frederick, when we talk about pain, there's so many people who have tremendous amounts of pain today. And it seems as though the more confusing the economy gets, the more confusing it is to be in a relationship gets, the more pain we have. So it seems as though, from what I'm understanding, you've linked pain and emotions. Is that so?
Oh, that's correct. And, you know, this is a fabulous point that you started our conversation with. Do you know that there are actually government statistics that shows that every 4 years following an election, there is a rise in lower back pain that basically it's 6% more of people are suffering of back pain 4 years, basically right following an election. So you are right. The moment that people feel a little bit more stressed and they feel their lives a little bit more unstable, they experience low back pain, as an example.
Frederick, Does it go to specific areas in the back? Then the back. And let's say that I'm emotionally upset. I can't deal with the pressures of being responsible. Is it going to go into my shoulders? Is it going to go into my back? Have you found that certain emotional problems will center it in certain areas of the body?
Michael, you are actually really good. Your observations are wonderful. Yes, absolutely. Let's talk about this in a very specific manner. The book is called The Emotional Body Map. And the emotional body map is exactly mapping the emotional stress that we experience as individuals in our body. So, for instance, if we have particular stress with relationships, our left shoulder would hurt. If we have stress with what we do, our right shoulder would hurt. If we have stress and great, let's say, challenges with responsibility in regard to our work, our right knee would hurt in the front of the knee. On the left, it has to do with the burden of responsibility in regard to our affairs at home, our family.
And Frederick,
so much specific.
So much in life, you know, one of the things that I felt and experienced for many, many years now, if you have a challenge, if you have something coming up in your life, if you look at it, if you look very close, you look very deep, what you'll find is it's a message to you. The world speaks to us in one way, shape, or form. Then what I'm hearing you say, and stop me if I'm wrong, I'm not a clinician, but the body speaks to us. And based on where the pain is in the body, we can basically target the area of emotional stress, and then fix it from there.
That's correct. This is wonderful, because it is true. And actually, it is not really the body talking to us, but it is ourselves talking to ourselves. In other words, because we have a body, it lets us know when our way of life is in conflicted with our true potential, with who we really are. And that is the key here. People have dreams. They have passion. They grow up with dreams and things they want to become in life, and they feel great. And then they get hurt. They have emotional issues and stress through life like everybody else. And then their dreams start to be shut down a little bit. And then one day they start to live in a world that is not really reflecting who they really are. The byproduct of this is basically the pain. The pain in the body lets us know that we are in conflict with who we really are, what our dreams and our potentials are. And so the key here is, yeah, number one, to listen. And two, to be okay with having emotions, to be okay with the fact that, wait a second here, I need to slow down and listen to what's going on in my life and start to be passionate again and move forward.
Okay, Frederick, then the first step, let's say, for instance, I'm frustrated. There's a particular position that I want. There's a relationship that I want. Can't seem to get it, and I'll just pick a body part. And let's say I start to get stomach pains. I start to get upset around in that area. And now I get the DVD, the 2-minute solution, so I know what it is now. But then where is the next step? Where is that bridge to fixing it emotionally? Telling me what it is one thing. But now, how do I fix it?
Well, awesome. So you really don't need to fix the issue of a relationship. We all are able to have great relationship with the world and with people, with work, with our colleagues, with anything we want in life. It's just that we don't feel good enough about ourselves to do so. That is the key. So really, when we talk of, let me give you a very specific example, for instance. On my website, theyourbodymap.com, I have a video right now. It's a free video people can watch, and it is all about the test, the 10-second test that lets you know why you have back pain or why you will have back pain. Because it seems that, according to studies, everyone in the world at some point will experience some form of back pain or stiffness. Well, this very test is exactly about this. It is about our feet and how it affects our lower back. And did you know that in our feet, if you have collapsed arch, for instance, and the test shows exactly how to do it online at my website, but actually you will find out whether or not you feel as if you feel supported by your past, by your parents, if you feel confident, if you feel loved. Therefore, it allows you to offer the same love and have good relationship with people, or if you have lack of confidence in life, where you're doubting your roots, where you're doubting your confidence, your skills, your ability to be successful in life. And that would be, for instance, in the right foot. The home issues, the parent issue, the lack of support emotionally at home would be in the left foot, for instance. So the test reveals how stressed we are, how we really feel about ourselves, which then, by doing a few exercises, which really is just one exercise in 2 minutes, changes literally how we feel. If the body reflects how we feel, then we can change how we feel that we change our body, or we can change the body that will also change how we feel. And people change automatically, and suddenly they develop great relationship with people, and they don't even necessarily know why, other than they feel great. Suddenly things click, things come together.
Frederick, where did it come from? Where was that place in your life where the light bulb went on and you realized you could do this? Where did you find this at?
Well, here's my little story is when I broke my back. You see, I've had to beat the odds with medicine. I was born premature. I had all kind of issues when I was young, and doctors kept telling me, my story was all the time, oh, the doctor tells me I have problem with languages. I'll have problem with balance, I'll have problem with coordination, I'll have problem with this and that, and I've had all kind of injuries and disease when I was a kid. And then at 18, during a circus tour in Germany, and I'm from France, by the way, the first time I left France, I performed with these people that I just met in a great circus in called Roncalli Circus in Germany, and I broke my back. I fell on my chest. I was the top man in a pyramid of three guys, fell on my chest and saw my feet land in front of my eyes. I heard a pop and basically broke my back. I broke a vertebrae that left me in pain for 2 years. Doctors, I tried all the treatment that they were offering at the time, painkiller and everything else that I could do, manipulation and everything. Everything was hurting. Until one day I realized that actually the issue of my back was not the broken bone, was not the nerve and the possible invalidity that I will have or handicap I will have in the future if that bone starts to cut the nerves, as they told me it can be. No, the issue was how I felt about myself. I felt very unstable. I felt as if I didn't have a foundation in life, and therefore my back was not giving me the foundation I needed to feel. Matter of fact, today I talked to a lady that was in the same situation, and a few minutes later, after I told her exactly what to do, she sent me a text message telling me she was pain-free. She couldn't believe it. She was pain-free, and she felt so much better. She felt completely different. So that's, for me, it started with my back when it became the light bulb came on, when I realized, wait a second, it's not so much the body as much as it is how I felt.
Okay, so in essence, you put the two together. You know, there's so many people that are looking for an answer to something, some kind of resolve to the problems that they have on an everyday business basis, and there's so much overweight going on, and people just hiding the pains through drugs, through pills, whatever. Very hard for most people to stand up and face what the problem is. But if you don't know what the problem is, you deal with the symptom. And if you deal with the symptom, the problem never gets fixed. So when people come to you, are they usually in shock that it's so easy to be able to, number one, spot the kind of problem emotionally they're having based on where it is in their body that they're hurting? And then when you change that, how easy it is to make that emotional shift to change their lives? Are they a little bit shocked when that happens?
Well, number one, Michael, you are right. There are people who even experience a healing really fast, which some of them say it's a miracle, which really is not. It's the science of the human living experience. We are miracles, walking miracles. So we can do all this. This is wonderful. But I have people sometimes who healed, and they came in to see me, and they couldn't stand straight. They were in so much pain for so long, unable to work, unable to pick up their kids, suffering, not be able to drive. It was terrible. And then less than 5 minutes later, they're pain-free. And they would freak out. They said, there's no way. It's impossible. I would have people walking in the door telling me, listen, I do not believe in what you do. And I say, great. I don't need your belief. It either works or doesn't. And it's very simple. And by the time they leave and they're pain-free, they suddenly feel incredible. But very often, I've had people walking out saying, it's impossible. It's impossible. It's impossible. And here's the trick. The mind, what we have learned about ourselves in our lives, is rooted in our mind, and it's rooted in the past experience, the experience of our parents telling us what was possible, what wasn't, our social, cultural environment and religious environment that tells us it's possible or it's not. Do you know that I have people that are Christians, for instance, and other religions too, who, while they say they believe in miracles, do not believe in the miracle for themselves because they don't feel they deserve it? And, you know, my heart goes out for them. Because, like you said, sure, people are in tremendous pain, and they try to mask the symptoms with medication. But the fact is this, it's not the symptoms that we really try to mask. We are not comfortable with being emotional. And so we try to avoid dealing with it because we've been told no pain, no gain, because we've been told that we need to tough it up and be strong, particularly as men. The message we've learned since childhood is, hey, wait a second, don't be a sissy here, don't be weak. Hide your emotion, be tough. Well, the stuff doesn't work. If it did, that'd be great. Everybody would be healthy, but we're not.
No, and I think, Frederick, when it really comes down to it, you've hit a very strong point. At the end here, it's because there's so many people who don't believe they deserve happiness. They don't deserve to be in a good relationship. They, quote unquote, deserve pain. It's a learned process. And I really believe, and I have for many, many years now, that if you can learn something, you can unlearn and you can relearn any alternative that you want to. You can say you can be joyful and happy to someone, and it's going to go about a foot away from their face, and it's going to stop right there, and it's not going to go any farther. Most people have that feeling about themselves that they, quote unquote, don't deserve it. But I'm looking at what you're doing in a little different way, because once you get through it and they can actually see it. Now, this not deserve is not something that happens consciously. This is an unconscious pattern that we follow when we move through. And the end result of our lives is based on how we feel about ourselves, proving ourselves right about ourselves. This way, if it hurts on the left, it hurts on the right, upper, lower, whatever the case may be. Then when you target it, they can kind of step back from the emotions, look at their body, and then through their body, realize what the problem really is. Because when the pain goes away, the emotion has to turn around. Because if the emotion didn't turn around, the pain would still be there.
That's correct. And this is the wonderful thing about who we are as human beings. And you pointed it out. The emotion dissolves. We don't need to talk about it. We don't need to go over it for years and talking about the misery we experience, though it can be helpful in therapy sessions, but it only takes us to a certain point. At the end, we have to discover self-love. We have to realize that the things that we didn't get from either our parents or environment during our youth to nurture ourselves, to make us feel good about who we were, about our achievement, potential, our skills, our dream, and so on, we have to give that to ourselves now as adults. We must do that. No longer seek it in our environment, but we must do that to ourselves. And what happens is once we feel better, once we really heal physically, the emotion is gone. It doesn't have a place to be in the body anymore. It no longer exists because at the root of who we are as human beings is our potential, and our potential is not made up of emotions. It's only made of an incredible possibility and just unlimited dreams. And, I mean, look, we go to the stars now. We can fly. We can do anything we want. To these days, for instance, you have people who are developing technologies now, like wings, to be able to jump off an airplane and fly. The only thing now they try to do is find a way to land safely, which would be really good.
Okay.
But you see, the thing is we have an incredible potential. Whatever we have in our mind, we can happen. The dreams of our childhood, we can achieve still now. All it is to give ourselves permission and not to feel ashamed of the fact that we've been hurt or that we didn't have the best support in our lives. But now it's time for us to make up our mind and say, I no longer want to suffer, and be honest with ourselves. The moment we do that, then suddenly creativity. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm on your side of the table with that one, because you can't, if you don't love you, you can't love someone else. So if you want to do something for someone else, it's got to start within you, because if you can't relate to it, it's just not going to happen. Let me ask you this. Where do we find the book? Where do we find the DVDs? Do you have a website?
Yes. The website is yourbodymap.com. And remember, I have, if people just sign up on it, they get the 10-second test to find out why they have lower back pain. And it explains exactly what's happening in the body mechanics. And I have a survey right behind. And the survey, if they want to fill it up, in 2 weeks, what I will do is in 2 weeks, and for your audience, I look forward to be doing this, they can tell me what they want to see. And I will shoot in studio within 2 weeks the 2-minute solution to the one most popular topic that they want to, that they're requesting.
Amazing.
I will do
great.
This and provide it to them free of charge.
Wonderful. Hey,
and yourbodymap.com, and the book should be coming out very shortly. We're still in the final editing phase right now. It's a great book. You actually look at it and it looks like a map. Where you look at the body, it looks like a map with emotion being charted as if it was, you know, a map, basically looking at the America, for instance, and looking at the map and the states. Well, we're looking at the left shoulder, and it stands for this, the right shoulder stands for that, and the details. But the key here is not just about what's wrong and the emotions, but actually the book is about discovering what we can do in just seconds to be pain-free and to heal and to live our full potential.
Love it. Hey, Frederick, thank you so much for joining us. And I think what you've got, it's a good thing, and it's a very workable thing. From my experience, somebody with pain should be getting a hold of what you've got. And by the way, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Michael, thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night, Michael.
There are so many fabulous faraway places to see. Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me? I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Sharon Craybaum with us. She is the author of Is Your House Overweight? Recipes for low fat rooms. She's worked with hundreds of clients over the years. She's an interior designer, a fashion merchandiser, and she has started her own interior design and staging firm in Northeast Ohio. And let us say hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. And by the way, I think it's a brilliant idea the way you're looking at this. Is your house overweight? What got you to first take a look at this in a way through the eyes that you look at it through to this day so people could look at the house in a completely different way?
Well, I found that when I've had clients over the years take my house diet and live it as a lifestyle, they have lost weight themselves. And so I decided to write the book showing people that there's measurable success when you measure and weigh everything that you get rid of, whether you're donating it, selling it, you know, discarding it because it's broken or no longer, you know, valuable. I have found that, you know, people really get into the success and they're happier about themselves and they just end up losing weight themselves.
How hard is it for people? And I think it's a fair question. People, Sharon, they don't like to get rid of things. You know, you go into people's closets and it's stacked. It's stacked with stuff that was there 150 years ago that they just don't want to let go of. Is that a tough thing for people to do?
Yes, and for several reasons. A lot of the stuff is accumulated because we're feeling an emotional void. So let's say we have something to celebrate, a promotion. So we go out to dinner, we, you know, we have a nice dinner, and then we also buy that big screen TV or, you know, that new sofa or something that we've always wanted. We always, and if we're sad, sometimes we fill the emotional void by, you know, retail therapy or buying things. Other things accumulate because we feel an emotional attachment to certain things. They bring back a memory, a positive memory, a memory of our children's childhood, so we can't get rid of their old toys, sometimes their old clothes, you know, their infant clothes. And then the other thing is we have an emotional attachment to gifts. So we feel that we might hurt the feeling of the giver by getting rid of the gift, even if it's not serving us anymore, it doesn't fit, it doesn't look good, it's not part of our lifestyle. So a lot of it is the emotional attachments that we have with things, which, you know, is harder for us to let go of.
Okay, so really talking about two drivers here. The first one is lack of something emotional, something to fill you up. And then the other thing is guilt. That's what I'm hearing. If I get rid of it,
yeah,
someone who gave it to me 30 years ago might feel bad about it.
Right. I love Dear Abby's response to that. And she says that once a person gives a gift, that belongs to the recipient, and they can do whatever they want with that gift, whether they give it to someone else, you know, to share it with someone else, or they keep it, or they get rid of it, or they sell it, donate it. It's okay because they gave it as a gift because it's thoughtful at the time, but that doesn't mean they have to hold on to it if the gift isn't appropriate. So I really like the fact that Dear Abby says the giver really wants to give you a gift and also give you the freedom to do what you want with it. You don't have to keep it.
Well, that's the key with the freedom. Let's say that you and I really knew each other well, and you wanted a watch, and there was a particular watch that you wanted. So I went out and got a part-time job, and I just did everything I could do. I got the thousands of dollars for that watch that you want. I finally bought it, and I run up to you, and I say, Sharon, here's the watch. This is the one you wanted. And you look at it, and you say, wow, really nice, and you hand it to your sister. Now, most people, I heard the laugh, most people would fall apart if you did that to someone. And
right.
I think realistically, what you're talking about, it's the freedom. Once you give them the gift, it's theirs. The moment that I control where it goes, it's still mine, so it's not really a gift.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a gift then, yes.
Yeah, because I control where it goes. And if I give you something 20 years ago and you get rid of it at a garage sale, and I'm upset, then it's not yours, it was mine, and you should have never been in possession of it.
Right, yeah. And I think that once people realize that or stand back objectively, I suggest that when someone really feels overwhelmed with their possessions and they have the incentive to declutter, that they have an objective person with them to help them, you know, talk through the decision-making. You know, like, do you really need that souvenir from when you went to Hawaii, that hula dancer? What are you going to do with it now? It's not out. You're not enjoying it. You know, you had it stashed away. Is it going to hurt you to get rid of it at this point? So a lot of times you need the objective person as your alter ego, your conscience, you know, the advisor who's not attached to any of your stuff. And they help. They help you get past that indecision.
You know, by the way, interesting point also, and this is one of the things that you talk about, that overweight houses usually have overweight people in them, and the house is really an expression of themselves.
Yes, and I explain this, that if a person has, you know, a lot of clutter in their kitchen, you know, piled on, even on top of their stove, and they're not able to use their stove to cook, it shows people that, number one, they haven't, you know, thought of themselves enough to want to cook, you know, to be healthy and to cook healthy. They don't put away their items. They don't have a home for their items. So it just is a reflection of where they are in their life. Now, I don't want to be judgmental to anybody because I know that sometimes there's a tragedy, a crisis, and, you know, a lot of things, you know, get, you know, piled and things like that. But if someone is living that way, you know, for a long time, I think they're going to start feeling the effects of it, and then, you know, at some point there's an incentive to get out of that, you know, to change their life. They want a clean kitchen, or they want to be able to cook on their stove again. So a lot of times, you know, it's, you know, the incentive that they have, they want change at that point. And that's the only time you'll get success, is when the person living that way wants to be living differently.
By the way, let me throw this word out. You'd used judgment a moment ago. Sharon, I think there's a big difference between judgment and observation. And what you're doing is you're observing. That's not a judgment. And, and if you don't observe and you don't, you said if you get some, that's someone who comes in that's neutral, quote unquote, they're the ones you're going to really learn from because they're not involved in it. They're not stuck in it. But it is. It's an observation. And if you keep seeing this, if it only happened in one or two homes, okay, maybe there's a little judgment there. But if you find it happening in home after home after home, now it's an observation. It's almost a focus group, and you zero in on what the problem is.
Right. And I noticed that a lot of my clients, you know, once they start doing a little success, like cleaning out a junk drawer, or let's clean your counters, let's find a home for these things. And I think most of my clients that have hesitated to have myself or a professional organizer in their home, they're afraid to, you know, to have that judgmental attitude. And we always, you know, allay their fears and just say, no, they're, you know, we're not going to tell you that you have to do anything that you don't want to do. But we are going to tell, we're going to help you work through the best option for how you want to live. And that really makes them feel at ease because we're not going to say, you have to get rid of this. And all of them say, oh, we're so glad you didn't say that.
No, by the way, with the professional organizer, I think that's a very important word. Most people think they can organize, and I guess, again, take another look. It needs a professional to come in occasionally to teach you. Organization is not—it's not natural. It's an acquired skill.
Yes, I agree. And I'm typically right-brained because I'm a—I went to college for interior design and fashion merchandising, so I'm all right-brained. And a lot of professional organizers that I refer clients to and that I work alongside are left brain, and they are very methodical. They can organize things in their mind. You know, they're more the mathematician type. So we do make a great team. But you're right, organization in itself we're not born with. We definitely have to learn it, and that's the good news for any homeowner that you can be organized. And a lot of people watch HGTV today, and you can get ideas and inspiration and try it in your own home, and it works. They just need to be taught, and they need the tools.
Oh, absolutely, no question about it. Everything in life is a learned response. Just because you buy a home doesn't mean that you necessarily know what to do and how to deal with that home. Just because you buy furniture doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to have the right design to match the house that you're in and position in the right place so that you can get the most of it. So I truly believe in professional organizers, professional people to come in, look over your shoulder and see what you don't see. Not that we're blind, but how am I going to see something that I didn't even know existed?
Right. Right. And give us it's great having the tools. We always see, beautiful pictures in Real Simple magazine and a lot of magazines that have everything, beautifully merchandised and put together just right. Model homes have everything, organized just right. And we could do it as well. And we just need the cues, from, the professionals who do it. We just have to mimic that same, format.
Well, there's another area of consideration, too. I know you address this. Money. Look how much less expensive it would be by getting rid of all of these things, being able to really deal with what you have. And as a matter of fact, I think money has a lot to do with this also.
Yes, I had an example where a friend of mine wanted to have a garage sale. So she said, let's meet my husband at our storage unit, and we'll find some items that we can bring to the garage sale. We went over to the storage unit that they had for 8 years, and they paid $175 a month. And we arrived, and we found broken toys, broken bicycles, old furniture, which, because it wasn't climate-controlled, were moldy and mildewy, old clothes no one was wearing, and old household goods. We couldn't find a single thing in there that was in good enough condition to sell at a garage sale. So in his mind, the husband was calculating here, okay, so for 8 years, I've spent $175 a month. That's $16,800 on stuff that won't even sell at a garage sale. What I try to tell people, it's very expensive real estate, that I try to tell people if you only live with what you use all the time and keep recirculating it, you're recycling because you're giving away things to people who could use it, and you're doing good for you, good for the planet, good for people who are in need, and you don't waste money storing it. Even if it's your dining room and you're piling things in your dining room, that room, if you figure out how much square foot is in that room, you're spending a lot of tax dollars just to have that extra room, and you're basically using it as a storage unit, and you're not enjoying it. So each meal that you actually end up having in that room may cost like $100 or $200 before you even start buying the food. So I try to give people an idea of the value of real estate and how much it does cost to just have things wasting a room because they're just being stored there. Mm-hmm. Also, you end up buying duplicates because you can't find the item that you need. I find that happens a lot with people, you know, in their office or in their kitchen, you know, they can't find something, so they have to run to the store and buy another one.
You know, realistically, when you come down to it, this is why GS keeps coming across my head. I look around at the studio and I think, garage sale. Let it go.
Yes.
We're just about out of time. Sharon, do you have a website we can find you at, get the book at, and some information and tips?
Yes. Actually, my website is www.staged, S-T-A-G-E-D, makeovers, makeovers.com. It does have a section on there for free tips. If you sign up for my newsletter, you'll get free tips on a regular basis. And my book, Is Your House Overweight? Recipes for Low-Fat Rooms, will be available for sale everywhere in about 4 weeks. Right now, you can pre-order at atlasbooks.com, and then just under the search, just look up Is Your House Overweight, and I'll come up, and you can pre-order. If you order from my website, which will be available too, I can mail it to you and personally sign it.
Wonderful. Hey, by the way, thank you so much. And Sharon, I've really appreciated your time. I think we got great ideas.
Good, good. Thank you. I appreciate the interview.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
You love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call, and the only heart I own for you and you alone. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a lover's burning light will warm the winter night. Oh, that's all. Whoever you are,
I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet, not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and you're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. And each night, we'll bring you the best and the brightest authors and experts with solutions, the topics you want to hear, and the people who know to bring them to you. So let's do it together. Let's get to the heart of the issues it faces every day, right here, right now on Dresser After Dark, coast to coast and around the world on the BBS Radio Network.
Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say, don't cry because I'm alone. All of my memories are happy tonight. I have had a love of my own. Hallelujah! I've had a love of my own like yours. I have had a love of my own.
Attorney Michael Hallmeyer back for with us for It's the Law segment of Dresser After Dark. Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Michael Ray. Thanks. How are you?
Oh, good. You know, I've looked very closely at the debt and the ceilings and all of the things that they're talking about, which most people don't understand. And I think what it boils down to, it's not about the economy. It's not about jobs. It's not about any of the things that cause us to be comfortable with our lives here in this country. It's about getting the vote.
Well, that's the bottom line, and that's certainly the soap opera that's going on this afternoon in D.C.
And I think it's unbelievable when we watch what's going on. They do not have our best interests at heart. With all due respect to them, It's who's going to vote for me. Let's go into the, you know, a particular ethnic area and they'll vote for me. Or let's go over here to a particular religious area and they're going to vote for me over here. And Michael, it's an absolute shame. And the problem is we buy it.
It's really embarrassing. And like you put your finger on the key to everything. Of course, it only happens if we let it. And we've let it or things like this happen too long.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call, and the only heart I own for you and you alone. That's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
To enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are.
Dr. Kathleen Puckett with us, co-author of Homeland Insecurity, former FBI psychological profiler in the counterterrorism unit. Hey, Kathy, welcome back.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, how are you?
I was fine until I read an article. I was going to talk to you in a very lighthearted way today about an article that I had read that Warren Buffett was essentially saying, yes, tax me, tax me. And I was all set to propose a nice lighthearted little discussion. And then I saw the announcement that first responders are not invited to the ceremony, the 10-year anniversary of September 11 memorial ceremony at Ground Zero by Mayor Bloomberg's office.
How could that be?
It's such a good question. I'm pretty blown away by this. The FBI is a very small organization. People don't realize that the FBI, where I was an FBI agent for 23 years, the FBI has 12,000 agents active duty at any one time around, and that's not that many worldwide people. We lost two of those people at the World Trade Center.
Sure.
And, out of the proportion, it wasn't a huge proportion compared to the New York City Police Department or certainly the firefighters. But I'm pretty outraged on behalf of all the first responders that the political decision was made, apparently, in Mayor Bloomberg's office in New York, that the first responders are taking second seat, and they'll maybe do something else for them later because there are politicians that they want to invite, and they need room for them.
You know what I do not understand?
Here's the outrageous. Yeah,
sure,
have you heard about this?
No. This is first time.
Yeah, I just heard about this. I'm so outraged, I can't even. You know, basically, Michael, we've been talking for months, years, since Terry and I wrote our book, Homeland Insecurity, How Washington Politicians Have Made America Less Safe. I've done a couple of interviews on it recently. I did another radio interview with someone who was essentially looking at the addiction to power issue of politicians.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this multiple times.
Sure.
But the tone-deaf nature of the political animal in this country at this point, at this end of this this 10 years of, this war on terror that we've been waging, the tone-deaf response to the people who rushed not away from the World Trade Center as it was coming down, but towards it. I mean, they were not, I think someone pointed out that first responders were not invited on 9/11/2001 either, but they were
first
there.
First responders put their life on the line also.
Exactly. They were not there for work because they were working in the building at the World Trade Center. All those people think, God bless them and their families, people who were in there, conducting their normal lives, going about their business, doing their business at the World Trade Center at the Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001. But the people who ended up dying along with them and being crippled later as a result, crippled and grievously wounded and sickened, many of them unto death, which is a disputed issue, but I think it's going to be really borne out in the future. They suffered greatly, and they are being excluded by. I'm really, really sorry to tell you that one of the Bloomsburg spokesmen, Andrew Brent, said the commemoration ceremony is for the victims' families. But the space constraints that they're talking about, they've never been specific. First responders have never been specifically invited, but they have shown up and stood vigil on every 9/11 anniversary since. And they're specifically being excluded by the mayor's office in favor of other politicians that are going to be attending these gala celebrations and the 10th anniversary of the attacks.
You know, truly,
I'm just outraged.
But truly, when you come down to it, who is it a slap in the face to?
It's a slap in the face to everyone who elected politicians who are supposed to represent the people, and it's a slap in the face, definitely, to the first responders who put their lives on the line every day. I mean, I'm not, having been an FBI agent, having been in law enforcement for many, many years, I'm the first to admit that in the FBI, I was never in the kind of daily jeopardy that that police officers are on the beat or military personnel are, you know, out on patrol. However, law enforcement is dangerous. We've lost agents every, you know, for years, and there's always the possibility that you're going to give your life in the line of duty. And this is a slap in the face to not only the police officers, but the EMT personnel, the people who worked for months at the site, polluting their lungs with the, you know, the terrible pollution that was there after, unavoidable after such a disaster. And are they now viewed apparently as a bunch of whiners who did their jobs but then expect to be taken care of for the harm they suffered as a result? I'm just outraged.
I'm absolutely
outraged at this.
But the thought that you have right now should be a thought that spreads through the entire country, because this is nothing more than an example of what a lot of people have been yelling about. They forget who is working for who. And you're right. There is this bit of euphoria. But if you give yourself a suggestion enough times, you'll begin to live what you think you are. And that's what happens to a lot of these. Kathy, let's talk about it. It's neurosciences. They get this shot of dopamine that makes them feel good about who they are. And it doesn't matter who gets hurt in the process.
Exactly.
Emotionally hurt.
Exactly. People ask me repeatedly, you know, when I do interviews about the book, when I did an interview about the book yesterday, the Homeland Security book, essentially the questions were about, you know, you keep on mentioning addiction. You keep on talking about addiction. You've in the space of a 1 minute, you've said addiction three times. I said, there's a reason for that. These people are in the grip of an addiction that makes them impervious to rational thought and behavior. They are lost in their addictions. And
absolutely.
It's to power. And unfortunately, they are the people in power.
By the way, it's the same thing that happens when somebody gets addicted to some form of dope. It's the same.
It's exactly the same, Michael.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they don't get it, there's a problem there. You know, we are electing people who are supposed to be able to think, use logic, use reason to be able to move through things and get solutions for the problems that we face on a daily basis. And if they do not understand what it is that causes them to be the way they are, there's a problem. I'm going to go back to Nancy Pelosi for a moment. When I watched her again in the last year or so, when she said, don't worry about what's in it, you'll find out afterwards. I watched her do that.
Yeah.
There was innocence.
We're taking care of you, she was saying, essentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't worry about it.
We'll take care of you. Look how they've taken care of everyone. And what's really astonishing is that since they are in power and they have put the, did you see the statement from the CEO of Starbucks today who said cut off the money to Washington?
Yeah, by the way. Which
essentially, don't pay the politicians anymore. Don't give them any more money. I mean, that's pretty radical by a CEO.
But the problem with this is They get their money. There's no question about that. The problem is when they're thinking about taking money back from the military, taking money back from those people who are retiring, people who have spent their lives working towards an end result. And if somebody's 65, 75 years old and they have no ability to get income, what's supposed to happen to them? But was there at any time,
Michael, it's like addicts. I've worked with addicts before. I've arrested addicts, and I've worked with addicts in a clinical situation before. And the whole point is that everything is second to that addiction. It doesn't matter who is in their way. They will go through anyone, their grandmother, a 2-year-old baby, to get what they need to get the drug that they want and they absolutely need. And the politicians are behaving in the exact same way. And the tone deaf behavior here of the political office of people who are getting this, who the hell is this, excuse my French, but who is this memorial commemoration, 10-year commemoration for anyway? Is it for the politicians? They apparently believe it is.
Well, let's look at the first responders. What are you dealing with? You're dealing with police officers, firefighters, civilian volunteers, people who worked and were right there. You're not just
EMTs,
talking about anybody.
Hospital personnel, nurses, doctors, people, citizens who just wanted to help, people who were just running to the scene of citizens who were responding out of their own sense of civic duty.
Yeah.
They are not handicapped by being addicted to power, because they don't have any power. All they have is the determination to do the right thing. Well, politicians don't anymore. They do not. They do not have the determination to do the right thing, because their addiction blinds them to it.
Now, but by the way, I have watched people get in front of a camera and say what they wanted to say to cover themselves, and you sit and you watch and you say, this is not true, but they're saying it anyways,
right?
Because if they say it, Kathy, you're supposed to believe it.
I know. Well, don't worry. We'll do the right thing. Don't worry what's in it. We'll go ahead and pass it and let you know later, just like Nancy Pelosi said.
Absolutely. And she's still.
And you know, it doesn't have anything to do with Democrats or Republicans, as you know.
Yes.
I mean, I am not. I'm a registered independent. Have been all my life. As far as I'm concerned, the political footballs that are being thrown around, this is going to really bite them. This is going to turn around. This story just came out about this first responders not being invited. I mean, specifically, they are being excluded. And this just came out, 6 o'clock Eastern time. So this is going to snowball over, I think, the next few days, because people's outrage is just not going to be contained by this. I don't think I'm going to be the only one who's outraged.
No, CNN has already jumped on it. As a matter of fact, they're all over this thing, and some of the organizations that are behind it. No, it's not going to be quiet, and it's going to be all over the place, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of excuses. From what I'm hearing you say, and stop me if I'm wrong, that they didn't get invited because there was only a certain amount of money that was put out to be able to finance this thing, and it was a certain amount of room, and the responders couldn't go.
The room, yeah, the amount of room, because more politicians are going to be coming this time.
Yeah. I mean, that's realistically what you're doing.
That's the thing that's amazing to me. It's just amazing to me. I mean, because it's a 10-year anniversary of the terrible events of 9/11, and which included not just Americans, but people from all over the world. And not only that, I mean, I'm looking at statements from clergymen who were, one guy apparently who drove all the way from Ohio and spent weeks there, removing at the site, removing and blessing the remains of shattered bodies. While there, this article says, he inhaled carcinogens that damaged his lungs, and he is now in hospice care.
Mm.
He can't attend anyway because he's too sick as a first responder. He drove all the way from Ohio. What politician would have done that without a photo op?
No, but I agree. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I really believe, I've got it up from CNN, and if CNN's got it, it's all over the place. The 9/11 first responders not invited to the 10th anniversary memorial ceremony.
This is going to be huge.
Yeah. And there's the other part of that. Kathy, if you're in that kind of a position, you can forecast what the kind of outrage or non-outrage.
Exactly, Michael.
Yes.
Exactly. That's why I said that. That's exactly the tone-deaf response. The political response to this is going to be surprise that everyone is so, that there is so much such an outcry about this.
Yeah.
Because they are in their own little world doing their own little things. They were going to get a ceremony together. Gee, we don't have enough room. I'm sure they are inviting President Clinton and President Bush and everybody, you know, fine. I'm sure there's a lot of politicians who are going to be there. You know who else has to be there? Their staffs and Secret Service to protect them and everybody else. And that means that they're going to crowd out the people who actually did the work at 9/11.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, and there's, who was it? One of the responsors, it's too far away from me, I can't see it, but from the auxiliary of police supervisors. I mean, there is group after group after group. You're talking 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people here.
Oh yeah. They're going to be. And as they pointed out, you know, we weren't invited on 9/11 2001 either, but we came.
Yeah.
And I know that there was just a big hoo-ha about a flash mob robbery, saying they should get a flash mob together of first responders. No, they should send limousines out to get every first responder and bring them to the ceremony. That's what they should do.
No question about it. And I think what happens here is we get off focus. When we get off focus, that's when the problems start. And I hopefully, with this thing up in front of the population as it is, that somebody's going to eventually do something. Somebody's going to take a look. My goodness, I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat.
I don't either.
Yeah, I hear you. Nancy Pelosi, if she would have been a Republican, I would have said the same thing. The key here,
I know you would have, Michael. Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the key here is
this. It's
not a
partisan issue. Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm going to elect you, Kathleen Puckett, if you're going to run for office, if I'm going to elect you, I'm going to put my money behind you because I think you're smarter, you're sharper, you got a handle on things, and you can do a little bit of forecasting. Forecasting to say, if I do this or if I say this, this is the flack that's
going
to
happen.
What
will happen? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. If I was running for public office and you supported me and I got elected, I would become addicted to the same thing that everybody else is there because there are no term limits like there should be.
No.
And I would get caught up in that whole inside the beltway nonsense like everybody else. These people aren't inhuman. They are just addicted.
That's the point. They are human. They are human. And being human, there are certain frailties. And along with those frailties, there are pitfalls and there are challenges. And, Kathy, if we don't look at it, there should be some kind of a course to take. You know, we have the ability to find, you know, financial literacy. How about political literacy? How about training somebody to be a politician and having those protection mechanisms that stop these problems from happening?
What a good idea, Michael. But remember, you and I had civics instruction in our high schools, right? Even in our grammar schools.
I didn't tell everybody how old we are, but I had wood shop.
And I had home economics.
I got it. Right. I get it. Loud and clear. But, you know, young Radio Susie sitting on the other side of the desk from me, she's going, I remember. I was there. Yeah. Okay. I remember home ec. Yeah, right. She's with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's
well, thank you for letting me vent today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. But the vent should have been a vent from I don't know how many people that should have been saying the same thing. So, Kathy, somehow somebody's going to have to listen. And we've got a year and a half to find the people who will listen.
Yeah, but the problem is, Michael, that it doesn't matter what party gets in there. They're all as tone deaf as everybody else. We've got to fire them all and get term limits and don't let anybody be in Washington for long enough to get addicted.
Kathy Puckett, you sound like a Tea Party person.
No, I know.
I know.
My partner will be very surprised.
No, by the way, I am totally with you when it comes to this. Anyways, we have to go. Website we can find you at?
HomelandInsecurityTheBlog.com.
Kathy Puckett, we will see you next week.
Thank you. I won't be so outraged, I hope.
Oh no, I'll be outraged. Take a little Prozac, a little what is that stuff called?
A little glass of wine. Yeah.
Being depressed. Albutrin. Yeah, we got other stuff. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Whatever you've done, it's all over. Wherever you've been is so strange. Yesterday's long gone forever. Damned if what you're feeling isn't change. Music that used to seem hollow now seems to fit in your range. Today is the now and the never. Damned if what you're feeling isn't changed. It's fun to wander along a yesterday road, trying so hard to retain all of the wondrous and beautiful times that never can happen again. So get yourself up off your past, friend. There's so much to rearrange. Tomorrow sits right next to never. Damned if what you're feeling isn't changed.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Alice Chan with us, Dr. Alice Chan. She's the author of Reach Your Dreams, 5 Steps to Be a Conscious Creator in Your Life. She's an inspired and inspirational practitioner, a writer. She's a speaker and a coach. She's a coach of conscious living. She's deeply passionate about helping others empower themselves to live passionately and joyfully. She's a certified career coach, seasoned business consultant, and former award-winning professor at Cornell University. Alice, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's so good to be with you.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, when we talk about reaching our own dreams and reaching out, Alice, do we have to know that there's something beyond what we think is possible? Taking that first step, thinking thoughts that you didn't think you could think, that's thinking outside the box. How do you get somebody to take that step when they don't know where to step, but there is a step to take?
That's a very good question. Most of the time, it's either one of two scenarios. Number one is someone who is in pain. So I think everybody can relate to, oh my gosh, it's Monday morning again. Do I have to get out of bed to go to work? Or thank goodness it's Friday. I can finally, the weekend is here. So that's at camp one. The second camp is someone who feels, you know, life is pretty good, but, you know, I'm just cruising along. And I feel like there's something bigger calling to me. But part of me is a little bit scared about looking at what that is. Or I actually am wondering if I have to give up my comfort to go there. And so in either case, it's really about listening to what is causing that pain in the first case. Or let's just take a little step towards exploring what that thing that's calling you may be. And maybe you don't have to give up your comfort zone immediately.
Well, let's talk about giving up comfort for a moment. If I was raised to know that when I fail, I'm successful because everybody told me I was going to be a failure. So now I'm reaching out and I'm being successful because I am going through my life acting the belief that I have within. So that comfort zone could be somebody being beaten. The comfort zone could be somebody that is emotionally torn apart every day. I think that we really have to define what that zone is, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times our comfort zone, again, even the people in camp one that I define in terms of being in pain is the comfort zone because they know how to behave. I mean, we've all heard that even people who, you know, stay in abusive relationships is because that's what they know. And the thought of going beyond that scares the heck out of them. And so, you know, comfort zone is whatever it is that we are currently in that keeps us there, whether it's limiting beliefs or it's because we don't know any better. Whatever is our current status quo is our comfort zone.
Yeah, and I think one of the most important things to get conscious about what it is that drives you in your life is to begin to realize that there is something there. I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there in pain. And it's such a way of life. It's such a way of life, Alice, that they don't even know that they're in pain. It's just what they have to deal with every day.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain level of numbness that goes with it. But I think, you know, you talk to a lot more people than I do. But in my professional career, you know, being a professor, being a consultant, even just being a friend, I hear a lot more people dreading Monday morning and really looking forward to the weekend. That is a very common thing that we hear, and that is a very good sign that something is not quite right about your life, because the few people, including myself, who can't wait to get out of bed because we're so excited about what we do, that is the difference. And so, you know, you raise a couple of different things that I think a lot of people can relate to, and that is, you know, we were brought up with a lot of beliefs that we actually forgot we actually even have, and they still run our lives because they reside in our subconscious mind that drives 95% or more of our decisions and actions every day, because we're not aware that they are there. So I'll give you a very common example. Given the state of the economy, everybody's worried about, you know, not having a job and all that, and everybody wants to have, you know, a fulfilling career that pays them really well. But how many of us were raised, for one reason or another, with the belief that work is hard, otherwise they won't call it work? And also, you got to work like a dog to make a good living. How many of us have those beliefs running in the background? And so with those beliefs, how could we ever break through any other life than the one that says, oh, my gosh, it's Monday morning, I got to go to work again?
I think the prize, Alice, at the end of the rainbow with this also is a belief is a learned behavior. And a belief, for the most part, you know, it's an unconscious activation of, let's say, a memory to something recognizable in your life. And if you see that happen, you respond to it, good, bad, or indifferent. You may be responding to something that could have happened 20, 30, 50 years ago, but you just said it early on. You're not recognizing it. You're not putting the two together. So what's that first step in recognizing that and then moving to the release of those limiting beliefs?
So first step is to become aware. So, you know, I don't want everybody to go crazy that every second that they're doing something that they're asking themselves, what am I thinking right now? But let's say, you know, just if you're new to this, just try this, you know, for a day, you know, set a time, let's say 10 a.m. in the morning, you're about to do something, and you ask yourself, okay, what's actually behind what I'm about to do? Is this something that I'm very purposefully doing, or is it something that's going on autopilot? So we just want to have those habits planted in our daily lives to start paying attention to what we're doing, particularly if the response that we automatically getting is, oh, no, I can't do this because I'm not trained to do this, or I am not that creative, or I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm not educated enough, things like that. So we want to have little habits that we start forming as a first step towards recognizing these subconscious forgotten beliefs that, as you said, might have been planted there 25, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, so actually, very interesting if we think about that. If everybody got up tomorrow morning and said to themselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? And actually began to, quote unquote, write it down, it would be very interesting to see what they were like when they looked at it at the end of the day. But if they got to that unconscious, why am I doing this? What is causing my behavior to be this way? The argument that I got in today, why did I get into that argument? Because it could have been somebody, an argument with somebody that had nothing to do with anything, but it looked like an old behavior pattern, an old somebody in your memory bank. And a lot of the things that we do, you're absolutely correct, it's unconscious. And we're dealing with a world that was instead of the world that is. And I love what you've got here, because if you don't make the transition, you're going to be stuck in that world and not really live life.
Exactly. I have other, you know, thoughts to share, but I know that we don't have a ton of time, so I'll take your direction in terms of whether or not you want me to go further with this. Or
go further, please, please. Time. Your time. Go ahead. It's your microphone. Go ahead.
One of the things that, you know, again, if someone's new to this whole idea of identifying limiting beliefs, is, you know, notice when someone else irritates you. You know, when you get triggered by someone's behavior, that's also another clue as to a certain limiting belief that you may be holding within yourself. So let's say you get really irritated that someone's late, and then you may ask, okay, why am I being upset about this? What does that really trigger within me that causes me to react to someone being late? Is it because I really want people to respect me, and that was how I was trained to be, and they're not? Is it because I have been trying very hard to get organized, because as a kid I was told I was supposed to do that, and so when someone is late, that's triggering that part of me that doesn't feel organized? So things like that, again, it doesn't really take rocket science for people to start paying attention to their beliefs, but just by paying attention to everyday little things, it's a first step toward identifying those limiting beliefs.
By the way, and if you reverse it on the other side, you begin to realize that if people say something to you or they don't like you, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with them. And this is it's an interesting reversible cause and effect. I'm going through life and I'm living in the past and I'm acting out the past in the future with everything that I know to be. And then somebody walks into the room and I see them and they don't like me. Is it they don't like me, or do they see something in me about themselves that they don't like, and it's a projection? It's a very interesting world we live in. You get a group of people in a room, and everybody's reacting and have no idea what's going on at the moment. They're living in many different time zones.
Right, and, you know, of course, we can't change other people, and so, you know, my desire is to help people focus on themselves and what they can control within themselves. So,
sure.
But that's a very great point, Michael.
Yeah, and I think the end result of this is if you walk up to me in a crowd and you slap me in the face, I can't stop you from doing that. But what I can do is control how I feel about it. And I think that in and of itself is what we're talking about here. Be responsible for your own emotions and live beyond some of this stuff that is causing so much pain to so many people.
Absolutely.
Now, where did that light bulb come on for you when you realized that this is a problem that has to be
addressed? Well, basically, I was in Camp One that I described at the beginning of this call. It was a few years ago. I was basically at a crisis point in my life. I had accumulated a lot of objective success in my life, you know, including getting tons of education, you know, got to be a professor at Cornell and won an award and all that. But I was feeling inside that there was something bigger calling me, and I don't know what it was. And I was in an existential crisis. And at the same time, I had been spending years trying to, you know, learn self-help and tools, you know, read spiritual texts and all that, and I was getting overwhelmed. You know, what do I do? What do I use? And so between my own pain and the desire to help others going through a similar thing, to have an accessible, usable, simple system that's all in one place, that's how REACH came to me. And I wanted to provide that to folks who are going through similar pain in their lives, whether it's numbness or full-blown crisis that I was in.
You know, interestingly enough, when you take a look at yourself, if you really look at yourself, you begin to see the entire world, and then you get to have a choice. And the choice is, do you want to be affected by the messages that come in, adversely affected, or do you want to live a life? The messages are always going to come in. It's just based on how you interpret it, how you take it in, how you perceive it, and what you want to do with it in the end result. Alice, do you have a website we can find you at? We are now starting to run out of time.
Sure. You can find me at http://dralicechan.com. Just my name, dralicechan.com.
C-H-A-N. And by the way, I have the book in front of me. You know the picture of you on the back of the book? Let me tell you what I see.
Okay.
The greatest, You got the greatest smile, and what I see is, I got the answer. You got that? I found out. On your face. All right, super. Hey, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk about what I love.
Okay, take care and good night, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Off comes the makeup, off comes the clown's disguise, the curtain's fallen, the music softly dies, but I hope you're smiling as you're filing out the door, as they say in this biz, that's all there is, there isn't any more.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and that, my friends, is a wrap.
Share the moment. And as the moment ends, I got a funny feeling we're parting out as friends. Your cheers and laughter will linger after they've torn down these dusty walls. If I had this to do.